All right, welcome to America This Week. I'm Matt Taibbi.
I'm Walter Kern.
Walter, what's up?
Nothing. I'm here in Montana. I haven't traveled for a couple of weeks in a row, which is rare. I wake up every morning. It's that Montana spring when you don't know if you look out the door whether it will be summer or whether it will be December again.
Right.
Yeah. And so it's been snowing. I've been holed up in a mountain cabin doing some writing, waiting for the world to reawaken. And I'm feeling good, getting ready for a big year. Every week I feel like we're just about to start, the weirdness in earnest. But I think we finally have, the election weirdness, the crisis of democracy.
It's a little like Lost season 4. Like I feel like we're about to have the full blown melee. We're preparing for the Cross Island confrontation, but it just hasn't happened yet. So being holed up in a mountain cabin writing sounds pretty good. I approve of that. That's awesome. Not a lot in terms of world shaking events this week.
Except for a bridge collapsing in Baltimore.
Well, yes, but that's just America falling apart, which is, right. I mean, that's an ongoing, leitmotif, right?
Right. It's true at this point.
Didn't you guys have a thing 10 years ago in Spy where you would pretend to have predicted stuff?
I don't remember that feature, but I did not predict the bridge collapse. But I think I'm pretty sure that there will be more such events.
Right.
And I have no, I'm out of conspiracy theories as to why. I only know that, once this eclipse happens in a week or so, I expect a hastening of bad juju. A quickening. At the last eclipse that happened in 2017, I was with a guy we both know. And right before it happened, he said, oh, no, all the bad stuff's about to start. And he started crying. I mean, he was really upset. He has astrological sensitivity, I guess. And I can't say he was wrong because, August 2017 did sort of mark a quickening of absurdity and,
disaster. Well, it was Charlottesville happened right after that, right? And then... trying to think of what else went on right around that time. Anyway,
somebody has to come out with a calendar of all the craziness that's happened, so that we can situate ourselves in time.
I've actually tried to do that. I've tried to do like a full chronology of all the sort of detours into irreality that we've or unreality that we've taken. But it takes too long. By the time you get to a third of the way through, a far too significant amount of time has passed, and you can never finish the thing. It's like Zeno's paradox. Like you can never actually get to the end of that.
Right, because there's no pause long enough for you to summarize the chronology up to that point. Just when you're starting to orient yourself. They spin the top again.
Right. Okay, so we did have a historically funny media story happen this week. And I think I'm relatively new to it because I was working on other stuff earlier this week, so I didn't pay attention to it in real time. So I had to go back and watch it again.
Same here. I was in a mountain cabin, and only in the last day have I... acquainted myself with the uprising at MSNBC.
So this one actually prompted me to go back and smoke weed again because some of the video was so funny that I wanted to see if I could get through without laughing. No, it's just not doable. So for those who don't know the backstory, well, I don't really understand the backstory. MSNBC hired Ronna Romney McDaniel. By the way, did you notice that her they kept inserting the Romney after she was hired?
And MSNBC host and Eminence Grease Lawrence O'Donnell made special reference to the fact that she seems to have dropped that Romney name while she was running the Republican Party in deference, he claimed, to Donald Trump. And he scolded her for changing her very name so as not to give offense to the Donald. And he asked, what example did that set for your children, Ronna, that you would do violence to your very name in order to kowtow to the madman?
Well, maybe we should start with Lawrence. I mean, or do we have to start with Rachel? I don't know.
I think we have to start with Rachel only because she sort of operated as the kingpin or orchestra conductor of this particular mini scandal.
Right. All right. So just for the background in this story, NBC, for whatever the fuck reason, hired Ronna McDaniel, the former head of the RNC, to come onto their team. Now, if you've been following the sort of journey of corporate media in the last, I don't know, 5-6 years, you will have noticed that there has been a trend away from hiring news professionals and hiring instead, say, former heads of the CIA or the director of national intelligence or White House press secretaries, some of them who have even in their own shows now, and like Nicole Wallace and Jen Psaki. But I guess in a response to some negative feedback about the political slanting of their network, they decided to hire Ronna McDaniel, who is the former head of the RNC. NBC hired Ronna McDaniel.
Right.
Now, when NBC makes a hire, that means that MSNBC is sort of kind of forced to start incorporating that person as content. Mm-hmm. And this led to an immediate absolute meltdown among the MSNBC staff, and McDaniel was fired after one appearance, I believe even like one question of one appearance, if I'm not mistaken. And this led to the metaphor I keep thinking of, the like a sea cucumber, if you attack it, it like opens its guts out and tries to be so disgusting that predators will like swim away and look for something tastier to eat. And MSNBC did that. Like every one of their shows was this sort of orgy of self-examination. And let's start with Rachel, I guess, right? I mean, I think we have to start with Rachel.
The person who is the head of the Republican Party during Donald Trump's time in office and during his effort to throw out the election result and stay in power anyway, and during his effort to run for election again after having done that, is Ronna Romney McDaniel. And she pitched in and helped. She helped set in motion the part of the plot that involved sending fake Trump electors to Congress from states that Trump did not win. So Republicans in Washington could use those fake fraudulent elector slates to contend that maybe Trump did win those states, even though he didn't. And don't believe me on that. There she is on page 23 and page 27 of the federal indictment charging Donald Trump with conspiring to defraud the United States. There's her personal appearance in this scene of the crime, as alleged by the U.S. Justice Department in this ongoing criminal case. In Michigan, where the fake electors are themselves now on trial, she told the state of Michigan in writing explicitly, do not certify the election results. The Detroit News has reported that with Donald Trump on the phone with her, she directed.
Okay, we can pause here. I'm gonna go ahead to the part later where she talks about the heroic uprising of MSNBC against NBC. But in the meantime, Walter, what are your observations about any of this?
Well, my metaphor for this, okay, every once in a while, there's a doctor or someone in Antarctica who gets sick or has a tumor and is forced to do surgery on themselves. This was MSNBC acting as though it had found a growth in its bosom and took a knife and cut it out and declared itself healed. It was a cross between an exorcism and a self-surgery for cancer. They made themselves the heroes of a story that needn't have existed in the first place, causing me to wonder if they really meant to hire her sincerely, or if this was all a play, which was meant to model how we are all supposed to act as we take out the cancer of Trumpism, et cetera. In other words, the whole thing had this dramatic structure in which you discover that a foul being is in your midst. You cry, you know, monster. You attack them as a village and throw them out. And then you hold a kind of trial in absentia, a retrospective trial in which you justify and celebrate your own purge. And I couldn't help but see the whole thing as this microcosmic model for how we're supposed to behave in general toward election deniers, Trumpers, Republicans, and so on, you know. And they used her as what was so strange was Trump doesn't want her as the Republican party head. He celebrated her departure. The party, as it's constituted now, with its kind of MAGA-centric, concerns, sees her as a rhino or a sort of traitor.
She's like a cut above Liz Cheney to
right, Trump right, exactly. Mm-hmm. But MSNBC used her, in this Greek tragedy as the cancer on the empire that is, thrown out and then all is well. And it was a Greek tragedy because they all operated as a chorus against one person. And we just saw Rachel, but we're going to see that every single host joined together in this, heroic effort to remove the stain.
It was awesome. I mean, it was across the board, and these videos will live on YouTube forever. Just quickly, let's go back to Rachel talking about the heroic resistance of MSNBC to NBC. So here we go with that.
But we do defend ourselves as an institution. Not because we're personally offended by the way that we're treated, but because a free and uncowed press is necessary for our democracy. A free and uncowed press is part of our system of government. We stand up for ourselves as a way of standing up for our country and for our Constitution, the First Amendment to which makes it possible for us to exist.
Now they care about the First
Amendment.
To
exist at all. Matt, we would disappear.
Hang on a second. Yes, we would disappear.
I mean, the rhetoric can't soar any higher.
Right.
Our very existence as molecular structures depends on the First Amendment, which, let's not forget, these people have been trashing with their other hand consistently when it comes to supposed purveyors of misinformation and disinformation. But nevertheless, now they are the last lone defenders of the First Amendment. And how did they defend it? By shutting somebody up.
By shutting somebody up. It's amazing. So she's going to go on and talk about, in defense of the First Amendment, we showed up the bosses. Here we go.
Yeah.
And so I want to associate myself with all my colleagues, both at MSNBC and at NBC News, who have voiced loud and principled objections to our company putting on the payroll someone who hasn't just attacked us as journalists, but someone who is part of an ongoing project to get rid of our system of government.
Okay, so if you think that that's that maybe that was like an accidental overhype, right? Like we hired somebody who was actually trying to overthrow the United States. MSNBC actually wrote a chyron for their own assault on democracy. Here's the Chris Hayes story.
A couple of hours ago, NBC News announced that Ronna Romney McDaniel, the former chairperson of the...
I'm sorry, but look at that. The attack on democracy, which happened in our own house when we hired Ronna Romney McDaniel. I lost it when I saw that.
They saved democracy. Rachel would suggest that they may have saved our very existence. And here they are, I mean, reporting on MSNBC internal politics, supposedly, as though they have put down Frankenstein's monster. And their pride in their own defense of all that is good. It's just amazing to watch the solemnity, the amazing bravery that they showed. And they're simply not above proclaiming their own bravery. That's what this is all about.
It's amazing. I mean, the real story is our ratings suck so bad that we turned our faces all the way inside out to hire somebody we couldn't stand. And that actually, we thought that we might have been able to put that over on our staff. But it didn't work out, so now we're going to take credit for saving humanity. And just focus on the chyron here. I'm sorry. I looked at this and I spit out everything I was trying to drink at the time. Here we go.
A couple of hours ago, NBC News announced that Ronna Romney McDaniel, the former chairperson of the Republican National Committee, will not be a contributor to the network. This comes just 4 days after NBC News announced her hiring as a political analyst. As you might know, we don't have a show on weekends or on Mondays. Between then and now, I've been closely following the news and talking to lots of people inside the company. And most of what I wanted to say about all this has already been said very well by my colleagues, from people like Chuck Todd and Joe Scarborough to Nicole Wallace.
Okay, so let's hear from some of those folks.
Can we pause just for a sec, Matt?
Yes, absolutely, yes.
Back to my Greek chorus comment. There they are in tiny little boxes like the Hollywood Squares. Old game show, you know, all ready to throw their stones. This is the lottery. You know, they should each be holding a stone with Ronna's name on it. I mean, look at this. This is not just, you know, an individual revulsion. This is true team effort against the intruder, you know.
I mean, look. I'm sorry, Nicole Wallace. Look at the box in the upper right there.
Right.
I mean, didn't she sell us on the Iraq War that this exact audience couldn't stand? Like, that wasn't a red line we couldn't cross.
Well, and then there's Rachel, chief proponent of the Russiagate Trump taxes investigation, and.
Morning Joe, who was Chuck Todd. Yeah, right.
This is their all-star team, you know, putting down a revolution that was within the company and presenting it as the biggest news of our time. I mean, Hayes there said that even on the days he wasn't working, he was following closely the developments.
Mm-hmm.
I can just see him at home. You know, his wife asking questions about the New York Times crossword puzzle. And he says, not now, honey.
I just got a text.
Yeah, I just got a text about the McDaniel affair.
Okay, so let's try Lawrence. Lawrence was sort of stentorian.
Look at that jaw. Look at the set of that mouth. It's General Patton himself.
Right? I used to like Lawrence, but mainly because I thought I would actually sometimes do that show, like when I was a guest, like I would be high on MSNBC. And I used to think maybe he was too. So like I used to feel kind of brightened. That's probably not true, but look at that face. Okay, so here we go.
Well, there was a time when Sunday morning TV belonged to my friend Tim Russert.
If it's Sunday, it's Meet the Press.
The line between the press and political operatives has been crossed countless times in both directions. Lewis Howe was an Albany reporter, a chain smoker, who believed that the freshman state senator Franklin Delano Roosevelt was destined for bigger things. Lewis Howe became not just Senator Roosevelt's re-election campaign manager, but the manager of Franklin Roosevelt's political career. There would have been no Governor Roosevelt. There would have been no President Roosevelt.
You can see where this is going, right? But go ahead. Yeah.
Well, two things, three things. Why did he identify him as a chain smoker? That will never be explained. It's just one of those.
It's a cliche.
But what he's doing is he's defending, before he moves on to his main point, he's defending the interplay, the crossover between the press and politics by saying, you know, we would have had no Franklin Roosevelt if it wasn't for a reporter. So he's saying that the principle of conflict of interest is one to be defended, because if we didn't put politicians on and if there wasn't this hybridization between the two, we would have had no New Deal, no Franklin Roosevelt. We probably would have lost World War II. Because he has to defend in general the case for using political people and having political people and having press people go into politics before he descends to the specific case of Ron McDaniel, the witch. You know, the
right. And sorry, I know I shouldn't keep harping on this, but the big development in news, especially since, like, say, the late 2000s, right, like the beginning of the Obama years, has been this infiltration of the news business by law enforcement, federal law enforcement and intelligence officials. Every time you look up, it's Frank Figliucci or John Brennan or John Clapper or Phil Mudd or Asha Rangappa or Stephen Hall, Samantha Vinograd, John Brennan, right? Chuck Rosenberg, you know, Malcolm Nance actually, you know, went overseas and, you know, I'll give him credit for the fact that he actually fought, I guess. But Jeremy Bash, I mean, they replaced journalists with intelligence officials as a strategy that did not win ratings, but was clearly designed for some other purpose. But this is the premise that he's now going to defend, is that yes, there's crossover.
And they've also, let's not forget, been hiring overtly political figures, you know, from Paul Begala to Carville to I'm having a bad moment.
Nicole Wallace.
Who's the Bush advisor, the sort of wizard of the right?
Turd Blossom. What's his name? Karl Rove or
Karl Rove.
Oh, Steve Schmidt.
Exactly. So all of this has been completely established now as business as usual. A business that I have criticized since it began. These are people that should be sources they're talking to off camera, not people they're putting up front, especially the intelligence people who are, let's remember, trained liars.
Right. And by the way, there's a major, I mean, it's a not insignificant ethical issue with hiring people like John Brennan and John Clapper in the middle of something like, for instance, Russiagate. They are in the middle of stories they are going to be commenting on, right? And if you don't, if you don't tell your audience that, you are crossing a line far worse than anything they could possibly be doing with, you know, the Ronna McDaniel thing. Like that is something that you could never have done, let's say 25 years ago in journalism without incurring all kinds of wrath. Now it's just routinely that that prohibition against not telling people that you're on air talent is in the, is a character in the story they're reporting on.
But Lawrence O'Donnell, being intelligent, knows that rather than defend that practice, which he's not going to defend, he should celebrate that practice in general. It gave us FDR. Mm-hmm. And then he goes on to celebrate the dead. You knew this was a full-scale Broadway production when they invoked the sainted Chuck Todd. Tim Russert.
Mm-hmm.
Who is to NBC what Edward Murrow is to CBS. And so they brought him in for no particular reason, just to show, you know, a picture of the saint on the wall, but also to suggest that his relationship with a guy named Stuart Stevens, who was one of, I think, Romney's campaign officials, was a wonderful model of how the objective press and, you know, outright politicos should relate to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, what his assignment was in the chorus was to make this bad business of hiring spies and, you know, political consultants look holy before he descends to this particular horrible case of this parasitic infection that they managed to
stall. Cause and then cut out. So let's go back to Lawrence just for a second, just because he actually ends up segueing to Chuck. So that makes it funny. But let's listen a little bit more to this argument of his.
There would have been no President Roosevelt without Lewis Howe. Tim Russert got his start in politics the same way I did, working for Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan.
And with us now, a man whose Senate staff I served on a decade and a half ago, Daniel Patrick Moynihan, the senior senator from New York. Senator, welcome.
Sorry, just to make clear, that was the difference. Back in the day, you had to tell the audience that what your relationship was to whatever story was you were covering, if you had one. But anyway, let's just go on.
Right.
Now, I'm biased, but I think Tim was the best moderator of Meet the Press or any Sunday show ever. No one ever questioned Tim Russert's fairness and objectivity, even when he was interviewing his former boss. And I have a feeling Tim Russert would have been cheering for his former protege and friend Chuck Todd yesterday after Meet the Press.
There is no logic to what he just said. None at all. Okay. So what he's saying is that Tim Russert had the ability, even with his former boss, even when there was a clear threat of conflict of interest, of remaining objective. So shouldn't, by extension, that mean that you can handle Ronna McDaniel too on your network?
One would think, but he's going somewhere else with this. But yes, one would think that. I also like the fact that he doesn't say Tim Russert yesterday was smiling when
right.
He said would have, because he didn't want to appear religious. But anyway, let's see where he goes with this.
And I have a feeling Tim Russert would have been cheering for his former protege and friend Chuck Todd yesterday after Meet the Press interview of the former Republican Party chair, Ronna McDaniel, who was hired as a paid contributor at NBC News last week.
I think our bosses owe you an apology for putting you in this situation, because I don't know what to believe. She is now a paid contributor by NBC News. So I have no idea whether any answer she gave to you was because she didn't want to mess up her contract. She wants us to believe that she was speaking for the RNC when the RNC was paying for it. So she has credibility issues that she still has to deal with.
Yeah.
Is she speaking for herself, or is she speaking on behalf of who's paying her? There's a reason why there's a lot of journalists at NBC News uncomfortable with this, because many of our professionals